She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. This show is sponsored by the Chapman Automotive Team in Tucson, Arizona, a true leader in the business of sustainability and committed to selling some of the cleanest burning cars on the road today, and we thank them for their support. So everybody, get ready for another amazing show, and I so mean that. It's about a very big company who has made and continues to make a major positive impact on our planet on many levels. The name of this company is Office Depot, and with us to share their impressive story is their Senior Director of Environmental and Supplier Diversity Strategy, Yalmaz Siddiqui. And let me tell you a little bit about Yalmaz. He is responsible for setting strategic direction and integrating a wide range of environmental programs into the global organization. And think about that, the size of Office Depot. We're going to tell you a little bit about their size in just a minute. He has a master's degree of philosophy in environment and development from the University of Cambridge in England, where his thesis focused on industrial ecology, life cycle analysis, and biomimicry. He also has a Bachelor of Commerce degree in Marketing and International Business from McGill University in Canada. We are going to welcome him for being here. There's actually a little bit of a glitch in the matrix. We're trying to get a hold of him. We did a line check a little bit ago, but he is the director, Senior Director of Environmental and Supplier Diversity at Home Depot, so perhaps there was a glitch in the matrix. Office Depot. I better not do that again. And one of the reasons that I wanted to have him on the show, I was at a conference at the University of Arizona, and it was for really thought leaders and change agents in the Office of Sustainabilities throughout the country, the Offices of Sustainability. And Yalmaz had so many unbelievably business-like and strategic points for the things that they're doing, a very systemic, well-thought-out, integrated plan for sustainability, which has to start within the organization and then go from there. So we're really impressed with, I was so impressed, and it took us, months to get him on the show. They are really corporate giants. They're removing all kinds of barriers in the area of sustainability, and we hope that we get him on the line soon. And if not, it's just going to be another day in paradise. I don't know if Mrs. Green can carry this whole show, but you guys who have been listening to me for a long time know that it's a possibility. And while we're trying to get him, let me do a little bit of a plug for two quick reminders, and we won't have to do it later on the show. We've put a lot of time and effort into developing our World Membership Program, Mrs. Green's World Membership Program. And one of the reasons we've done it is to help us be free and independent, to remain free and independent, which means we will never have to worry about taking big money to in any way influence our message. So that's why we've done this. Please consider becoming an official supporter of Mrs. Green's World to help keep our broadcast free and independent. You can do it by visiting our website at mrsgreensworld.com. Click on the Preserve the Planet icon and you are on your way. And we are thrilled with the success. So that's one thing. And another reminder is that we now have a great app for listening to our podcast. It's called Igloo Radio. And again, visit our homepage. It's a free app for any mobile device. And that was a barrier for us. Lots of people didn't want to be sitting by their computers at noon on a Saturday. All of our podcasts are on our website. So it was a possibility to really listen and learn from all of the great guests we have. I mean, this show is not about Mrs. Green. It's about Mrs. Green's World. So the Igloo Radio app is pretty amazing. I mean, it's really over the top. So you can go to our website. It's in your Apple Store. It's in your Google Play Store. And it's called Igloo Radio, I-G-L-U. We would love it. We would love it because it'll continue you on your education to creating a global community of making, creating a global community of people who care about the planet. So what I'm going to do, because we still have not gotten Yalmaz, this might be a first for me, everybody. I'm going to start talking about his story because it really is an impressive one. And hopefully we'll get him. We'll try him on his cell phone. We'll try him on his landline and see if we can connect with him. But in the meantime, what he wanted to do was initiate, facilitate, and communicate environmental programs that are then implemented through Office Depot's core function. So think about the size of Office Depot. I believe they have 64,000 employees. They have 1,100 retail stores in North America and over 400 stores, either company-owned, licensed, or franchised in other parts of the world. Like, honestly, where do you even start with that one? And how do you get your team to buy in? It's not like holding a staff meeting and then saying, okay, we are going to, you know, start doing all kinds of environmentally friendly things and be really green. So the areas that they had to look at, the core functions when you think about Office Depot, merchandising, purchasing, construction, and marketing. So he doesn't have to just educate the people inside in those four diverse areas. He has to help educate the suppliers and educate the customers on the environmental issues and why they are important and the opportunities. And he has a big goal. He's very, very passionate. He has many, many stakeholders. So that's what he's trying to do. And as I said, you know, he's got a big, huge passion and a big, huge mission, but he also has a lot of experience. And the one thing that struck me the most is he's got passion. He was a little bit about his background. He was a senior consultant in customer relations management and author of the first global study on environmental purchasing at IBM Business Consulting. And he did a global study on purchasing wood and paper products. And before that, he was a management consultant at PricewaterhouseCoopers, where he focused on forest, paper, and packaging industries. So he has a real depth to his conversations. He's got a lot of international influence, a lot of international, what I would call market force. So he talks about things. I mean, he does many topics, but he talks about what is green. One of the things I loved is that he very eloquently describes shades of green and really how that matters. And there's light green and there's medium green and there's dark green. And how do you bring people along each step of the way? And then the green cost continuum. Are there costs with it? One of his big philosophies is start first with why it makes financial success to do it. And I love that. And hopefully we'll get him on the line and he'll be talking about that. Specific ways. He doesn't just talk pie in the sky. He talks specifically about ways that you can go green and save money. So I want to do a big smile here. How am I doing, folks? Like, I love it. I wondered if I could ever carry my own show, and it looks like I'm going to be able to, at least part of it. And then specific ways about how going green makes you money. That's another important one. And how to tap into the growing marketplace of green buyers. I want to ask him when he comes on, is it growing? Is it shrinking? Are more consumers caring? Are more suppliers caring? And of course, you know what I think. And then small business growth through green. I mean, the small business is really the backbone of our society. So he doesn't just talk about Office Depot and the big guys. He talks about the small business owner. He gives specific case studies, and it's really pretty amazing. And all of this has led him to leadership positions. He's on the board of advisors for Electronic Product Environment Assessment Tool. And again, these are all pieces of the green wheel moving forward. I mean, you can have a small business, have green practices, do incredibly great green things, but if you don't involve yourself with other thought leaders and bigger institutions, we can only move the needle so much. And Yalmaz is all about moving the needle in a really, really big way. And I love that about him. He was the only private recipient, sector recipient of the Responsible Purchasing Network's Responsible Purchaser of the Year Award. And I mean, giving awards like that to me really matter. It highlights what people are doing and it makes it popular. It gives a really good spin to our whole purpose and pursuing perfection. You know, one of the things he says in his presentations is, how will I poke the world to make a positive impact? And that's something great for us to think about. What should we do? What should we not do? And that's what I say a lot in my writing. It's going to be in my book. How do we take small steps to make a big impact? And he encourages people to tell their own story. Then he intersperses it with his story. So what is your story from your birth to your life? And what do you want it to be all the way through your professional life, your personal life? His journey, as he says, is a very privileged one. And he talks about his businesses and his business failures at giants like McGill and Cambridge, and then most recently at Office Depot. What did his hard work result in? It resulted in the, for Office Depot, and I mean, again, think about how big they are, 64,000 employees, 1,100 locations, number one greenest large retail in America in 2010, Newsweek 2011, number one greenest large retail in America, 2012, Newsweek, number one, they do their green rankings every year, greenest large retailer in America. And I can tell you from my journey of being Mrs. Green, there are rigorous standards that continue to be expanded, that continue to be, you know, made more rigorous. And to meet them each year, this is true for colleges and universities. The rankings are not static. They come in and they look at what you're doing and they make sure that you are doing it right and making really good green things happen on a continual basis. His philosophy goes from the I would say it's the brown, not the green, but the highest environmental footprint, which has the least environmental protection. And then he talks about like what I would call a really light green, where you have a slightly lower environmental footprint. And again, I invite you to think about your own personal habits. What's going on? What are you doing? How are you making a difference? And then there's a medium green, much lower environmental footprint, but not quite where you want to be. You're making a little bit less of a footprint, way better than your light green. And this is what I call small steps, big impact. And once you start taking those small steps, you find yourself taking another one and another one and another one. It's like if you give a mouse a cookie. And then, of course, there's the dark green, where your actions are really compatible with the lowest environmental footprint and the most environmental impact. And I think that those are things like, even though he's talking about a huge company, which making a huge difference, there are more people on the planet than work for Home Depot. There are more people on the planet that work for, that work for large companies collectively. But at the bottom line, there's us. There's all of us that are making a huge, huge impact on the planet. And that's where it really begins, the power of the people. Another thing that I hope we'll get to talk to him about, and I really don't know what's going to happen. It's kind of weird. And, you know, this is Mrs. Green's world. And I just tell it like it is because that's the best way to tell it. But if you want to have a positive impact on the planet and want to make a positive impact on people, how do you make prosperity your first goal? How does that work? How do you look at economic stability, which supports profit and enables prosperity, incorporate that with social sustainability, which supports people and enables inclusion? To me, that's a huge one. And then environmental sustainability, which supports planet and enables protection of that great planet of ours. And from where I sit, you really can't do anything unless you have looked at those three things. And some of them, to me, include like the middle one, people. There has to be a look at fair trade and social justice. There has to be a look at including your employees. Mandates, by and large, don't work. They really don't work. And it integrates it with economic stability because you can't support social sustainability if you're not economically sustainable. You'll just go out of business. So that's pretty clear. And if you put those two together with a big vision of environmental impact, you can support the planet and enable protection of this great planet of ours. Another thing that impresses me about Office Depot, they've got big partners. I mean, they really do. They're part of the Sustainable Purchasing Leadership Council. And we're talking about partners like that are in this, like FedEx, like Waste Management. One of the biggest waste management companies in the world is Waste Management. They're partnering with them. A lot of universities, I think that matters, a big deal. Dell, that's another one of their partners. It makes me kind of sad because they are a partner with ASU, and yay for them, but I'd love to see the University of Arizona up there because I think that's another, they're another major player, have so many leaders in sustainability. They have a huge office of the Office of the Environment, IOE, which just wait, you're going to be hearing a lot more about that. They have at the table in this big, huge organization, the Fair Trade USA organization. I'm very interested in that, obviously, and I would like to know about how do they incorporate that. Another question when you see all of these sustainable purchasing leadership people is how are they going to make a difference, not just locally, but in the United States. I want to ask him about the sustainability practices in terms of purchasing from the United States of America and how possible is that and what are the barriers. Certification is another issue that I think is really key. How are they getting certified? Who are they partnering with on that? So, you know, there's many questions along the line that we want to talk about. And then economic stability, social stability, environmental sustainability, going back to how do you influence your vendors? I know that when Whole Foods and Chipotle go on to the next level, they've got to work with their vendors. When Whole Foods said they want to have everything certified organic, big pushback. It costs money. It takes time. It changes how you do business. Your facilities have to change. Educating your workers have to change. So how is a big, huge giant like Office Depot that does hundreds of millions of dollars in business regularly do that? I think it's really important. Again, obstacles from Made in America, fair trade, the human factor. I remember Yalma's talking about the human factor and why it matters so much about getting buy-in. He can't be everywhere. And he's got staff all over the country that he says are huge supporters of the environmental impact piece. They are thought leaders with him. He does not have a huge corporate staff, but he's got, I don't like the word soldiers, but he's got believers and team members and team leaders throughout every level of the organization. And to me, that makes a big, huge difference. So let me see, what else can I talk about? Because I really want us to be tenacious in trying to get him on the show. His thought leadership is that big, or I would have rang the bell. And we have 2 minutes till the first break. Hopefully, we'll be able to get in touch with him. And I also would like to say, if you're listening live right now, you can email me, Gina at Mrs. Green's World. You can text me at, I don't want to give my phone number out. I think that's really not a good idea, but Gina at Mrs. Green's World. I will be watching you on Twitter, and it's at Mrs. Green's World. We'll be tagging, hashtagging Office Depot and at Office Depot so you can watch it. But I'd love to know what questions you have. I see myself a lot as the consumer, the grassroots consumer, and I like to be the voice of the people. I like to ask what I think you would be wanting to know. What is the highest environmental imprint we have? How can we make it the lowest environmental print footprint that we have. And when you have a corporate giant, you know, there's people that listen to my show that really do say that bigger is badder. And as you know, if you've been listening to me for any amount of time, bigger is not always badder. If you have somebody like, Organic Valley, our friend Meyer Goodman at Earthbound Farm, Chipotle, you got some big players going on there. So we're going to a first break. I hope very much that we'll be able to be in touch with Yelmaz. I'm not sure what happened, but everybody, please stay here with me and we'll see what happens after the break. Thanks. Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Find everything you need for your next adventure at Bookman Sports Exchange. Buy it new, buy it used, or trade up and go where you've never been before. Explore this big backyard we call Tucson. Bookman Sports Exchange has the gear you need for anything from a quick day hike in Sabino to a long backpacking trip through the Grand Canyon. Bookman Sports Exchange, open daily, located on Speedway, east of Country Club. For details and more information, visit bookmansports.com.
Ready to clean out that garage? Goodwill offers you 40 convenient locations all over southern Arizona. And at every one, you'll be greeted by a uniformed Goodwill employee trained to assist you in unloading your items, prepared to offer you a receipt for your tax-deductible donation, and grateful for something you won't get anywhere else.
Thank you. Because of your donation, I have a job.
The gift of Goodwill. For a list of Goodwill donation sites, go to goodwillsouthernaz.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. This show is sponsored by the Chapman Automotive Team, and we found out that there is a glitch in the Matrix. We had a wrong number. Imagine that. So we are still going to be able to pull off the show, and we're going to get Yelmaz on the show. It's going to be a great show. It was the wrong number. The funny thing to me is that I talked to him beforehand. We tried the number and it's all good. It's another day that you just keep going in Mrs. Green's world. Yelmaz, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Thank goodness. That was so funny because I explained to our listeners, I did a great intro of you in the first 20 minutes, but it's the number I called you on is the number at which I reached you. So let's go on with Mrs. Green's world. Let me tell you what I said about you very quickly because I want the rest of the show to be all about you. Yelmaz is responsible for setting strategic direction and integrating a wide range of environmental programs into the global organization Office Depot. He is the Senior Director of Environmental and Supplier Diversity Strategy. He holds a Master of Philosophy in Environment and Development from the University of Cambridge in England, where his thesis focused on industrial ecology, life cycle analysis, and biomimicry. He has a Bachelor of Commerce degree in Marketing and International Business from McGill University in Canada. And welcome, my friend, and thank you for being here. That was a very interesting glitch in the Matrix. And just let me tell you what I did. I talked about you and your accomplishments the whole time, so you'll have to listen to the show.
For 20 minutes, is that right?
For 20 minutes. And you know what I was thinking, Yelmaz? It was like, this is getting me ready for my TED Talk, which is 18 minutes. So it's like, okay, I got a chance to practice. But, the truth is, I really know a lot about your journey. I do great homework, and I heard you at the conference. So I might have been able to go another 10 minutes. I don't think quite for the rest of the show. So let's
I really am sorry. Obviously, it's a little bit of miscommunication, but we can proceed, hopefully, without a technical glitch from now on for the rest of the show.
You are not going anywhere. So let's start off. Let's like toot the Office Depot horn, toot what you are doing in a really big way. Tell us a little bit about your story and the lessons that you learned from your story, because they should be of great interest to all of our listeners.
Well, the story began a long time ago, 1991, 1992, which I would describe maybe as the rise of sustainability 2.0. There was 1.0 in the 70s with the first Earth Summit. 2.0 was when I was an undergrad. And maybe we're in 3.0 now, right now, where there's a sudden resurgence of interest in this topic again over the last few years. So 2.0 was, I was in business school in McGill in Canada, and I just started reading partly just business books, articles, etc. And in the mainstream media, as well as to some degree in our courses, we started talking about the subject of sustainability and sustainability in business. And I remember one particular moment picking up an economics book called Small is Beautiful by E.F. Schumacher. And at that time, I was taking a regular macroeconomics course. And Schumacher wrote a completely different book about economics. And the subtitle was Economics as If People Mattered. And his basic premise was that modern-day neoclassical economics does not recognize that people have multiple reasons to do things. We're not only driven by economics.
Right.
We're driven by multiple things, by values beyond that. And it really struck me as correct. And so I spent the next number of years really exploring environment and development as sub-themes within the business world. And that led me to my master's at Cambridge. And very long story, I became a business person first after Cambridge. I did an environment development master's, very technical, very sort of deep
right.
environmental thinking.
When you're talking about biomimicry, that's deep.
That's deep, yeah.
Yes.
It was very, very, technically technically deep. And then, I got really good advice from some career advisors at university. And they said, you got a business undergrad. We have few people in the business world that are interested in this topic. So get some credibility in business. And so I became a management consultant. I worked with PricewaterhouseCoopers and IBM for 8 or 9 years, and then brought that expertise in how business works to my role at Office Depot. And whereas I think we've done a lot of great things at Office Depot, we can still do a lot more. But I will say the business expertise gained in management consulting has really, really helped. Because to make advancement in sustainability, we really need to make the economic case for what we're doing as much as, if not more than, the environmental and value case. It's really, really important to understand.
And one of the things in listening to you speak before and in thinking about the giant, the corporate giant, the size of the machine, I believe the latest statistics I could find, you have 64,000 employees, you have 1,100 locations plus 400 that are, company owned or, in addition to the 1,100 stores that are directly managed. Owned license.
And that doesn't include Office. We've just merged with Office Max, so there's another 800 stores to add to that number.
I remember that now. Oh my gosh. So you have, okay, there, press pause for taking a deep breath. But let's just break it down a little bit in bite-sized chunks for our listeners. When you are approaching this, you have this big new job, and you have to facilitate, communicate environmental programs through core functions like merchandising, purchasing, construction, and marketing. You don't just send out a staff memo. So what were some of the core approaches that you took? Because you have to get buy-in at all of those four levels strategically.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yes, it's tough. And let me tell you, I made a number of mistakes initially. I initially tried to get a bunch of people together, including senior leadership, and hold workshops around our strategy. And it's almost embarrassing, but people didn't show up.
I get that. Oh, my gosh. I so get that. I can match story, not on... Okay.
yeah, these are embarrassing moments where you call a big meeting and like three people show up and you've got this big game plan for how you're going to change the company. And it's really embarrassing for me and for the people who showed up because they think, what are they doing at this meeting?
I know. What?
So really what you need to do, and this is really, it's surprising, but you need to make personal relationships. And you need to help people before they help you. So that's what I started doing. Over the years, I started having more lunches with people at the manager or director or senior director level, and slowly over time, also getting higher and higher, and getting in touch with the C-suite and getting to know them to some degree, and then really working with different people, mainly I would say at the manager, director, senior director level,
right.
People who actually are doing a lot of the work, whether it's deciding on, the lighting that goes in stores, or deciding the products that we put into our mix, or deciding which customers, major customers, meaning business-to-business customers,
right.
to talk to about environmental sustainability. And really, I've spent a lot of time in the last, let's say, first year was candidly trying to work out how to do this job, because it's still, we're getting more common in corporate America to have a environmental strategy person. But the job is not really defined. It's not clear. Everyone's got a different structure. Everyone reports to different places. There's no real clarity on how much the central environmental team does versus the functions.
Right.
It's really new.
It's a
and
big,
so I'd say the
big
first
animal.
Few years was, it is a big animal. So the first few years were just learning, maybe, and the last few years working with specific functional leaders to make them see the business case of acting in ways that also reduce our environmental footprint.
So did it help for you to start with financial arguments or facts versus using the environmental ones when you're opening doors? Let them see how much financial sense it can make for them?
Yeah, so the two ways I started doing that was, firstly, spending a lot of time with customers, large customers of Office Depot's, whether it's federal government or major states, or cities or large companies that had environmental purchasing goals, and started connecting those customers to internal decision makers and making them realize that, we're not doing this environmental stuff just for environmental reasons and environmental reasons that what might be valid and might be of interest and importance to people like me as a corporate environmentalist, but it's not the main driver for business people. The main driver for business people is how do we advance the business to be doing these things. And so that's the lens you need to take. And as I started connecting more major customers to internal decision makers, I found it really helped. It gained traction, and things that might have taken me a couple of years to get through based on environmental and cost arguments, when you connected the person, the customer individual, to the internal decision makers, that sort of emotional connection that arose through personal relationships with stakeholders like customers really helped break through. So it's a combination of personal and peer relationships and economic arguments. And then the benefit is, the side benefit is the environmental win.
And one of the things that I picked up as a quote in the research is, and you were quoted, and I hope I quote you correctly, but you'll tell me if I haven't. If you want to have a positive impact on the planet and a positive impact on people, and I loved this part, make prosperity your first goal. And to me, prosperity is not just ROI. It's not just, earnings per share. Prosperity is a wonderful word that I think most people, who doesn't want prosperity in their life? So share with us a little bit about what you meant by that and why you picked that particular word. It's a really strong quote.
Thank you. So first, I'll say the triple bottom line idea was historically framed as profit, people, planet. And I think that's, it's great in that it widens the notion of the financial bottom line to considerations of people and planet as well. But I think it's less powerful than the wider notion of prosperity, because profit is profit for a single organization, economic profit.
Right.
Prosperity is about mutual wins. It's about the company benefiting from profit, and profit, in some camps, profit is a dirty word. It's actually not a dirty word at all, because profit is the enabler that allows a company to keep on going. And if you look at most charity and most philanthropy, where does it arise from? It arises from someone who's created value in a business setting and then paid and then given some of that away to philanthropy. So, you know, non-profit organizations all benefit from the profit that's being created by a company. But it's when you start going beyond your own profit and think about the prosperity of others and think about mutual wins, the customer winning and the supplier winning, the community winning and the retailer in the community winning, then you're pursuing this wider notion of economic prosperity. It's still an economic construct, but it's wider than just a single entity's profit, both of which are important.
And no profit equals no business. I mean, whether you're a nonprofit or a for-profit, if you don't continue to make a profit, and of course what you advocate for is to do it in a sustainable way, then there is no business. So I mean, I don't ever get that, how people can go after bottom lines. But you also have taken a really good look at the components that need to be considered along with environmentalism. So can you talk a little bit about those? And I have the answers if you don't, because I just freshly did my homework. But you talk about economic stability, social stability, and environmental stability. So do you want to expand a little bit on each of those?
Well, sure. I'll go back though to 1987, when the book that really triggered the later sustainable development movement was written. That was Our Common Future, written by the World Commission on Environment and Development, headed by Gro Harlem Brundtland, who's really the mother of sustainability. In that book, they talk about the classic definition of sustainable development, which is meeting the needs right. of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And that was supplemented a few years later by John Elkington, who's maybe the father of the sustainability movement, where he talked about the triple bottom line, the social,
right.
economic, and environmental. I think over the years, sustainability has been almost hijacked by the environmental movement. It's become an environmental idea, not the... not the triple idea. And what I'll say in terms of what I've focused on at Office Depot is really the intersect between environmental and economic.
Okay.
I'm layering in the next part of my job, the next few years, this notion of the people side of sustainability is going to become more formally into my role. I've just added supplier diversity and inclusiveness into the job, so the people dimensions become more important. But the main idea for the last 8 years is that it is not really, let me say in a quote, green is not sustainable unless it's profitable.
Agreed.
So the work has been to find ways to advance environmental goals and economic goals at the same time, and recognize that that is fundamentally the correct way to approach sustainability, because sustainability includes economic dimensions as well as environmental dimensions, and as mentioned, also includes social dimensions and the people side.
So do you think it's a dangerous shift that we're tipping a little bit, focusing more on environmentalism and not on the what I call the integrated package? It has to have all those components.
Yeah, the reason I think so is because if you forget that sustainability is really about continuation and our ability to thrive long term, forever, to sustain, if you repackage that and redefine it as environmentalism, which often in America, and you know from my accent, I've lived here for many years, but I originally grew up in Africa and England and Canada. Environmentalism in the United States has often been framed as environmental protection.
Right, right.
Meaning, prevention of... Like the model of preserving wilderness, romantic ideals of you know, desolate space. This is a romanticized notion of environmentalism that exists in America. And not that I'm saying anything's wrong with it. I'm saying there is a place for that, but for the business people, when they hear environmentalism, many business people automatically perceive environmentalism as that, as being anti-development, anti-profit, anti-growth.
Right.
And it actually, sustainability, the notion of sustainability, is not anti any of those things.
What a great line to break on. It's not a notion. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back to hear more from Yalma Siddiqui, the Senior Director of Environment and Supplier Diversity from Office Depot. Everybody, please stay here with us. Lots more great stuff to share.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine. It's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines. It gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
Shop the Habit Store first for your home improvement needs, appliances, and furnishings. We have daily specials, weekly red tag sales, and occasional store-wide clearance events. Join our loyalty program and keep up with the special offers through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. Your good deals means Habitat Tucson can build and renovate more homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if you have joined us, you are certainly being given lots of gifts of thought, lots of things to process and ponder. We are talking today about a very big company who has made and continues to make a major impact on our planet through their sustainability efforts on many levels. Office Depot. With us to share their impressive story successfully we got online is Yalma Siddiqui. He is their Senior Director of Environmental and Supplier Diversity Strategy. He is responsible for setting the strategic direction and integrating a wide range of environmental programs into this very large global organization. Yalmaz, thanks again for staying with us and for staying by your phone so we finally made contact. It's a story we'll remember. So let's finish that thought about, because I agree with you, where we left off was you cannot just think, in my opinion, there's my opinion popping out, of the environmental issues as preserving Yosemite Park. It's like it's important, but it's so not the only factor to consider in terms of the future of our planet and its sustainability and the sustainability of its people. So that's one of your core values of saying it's got to be so much more that, more active, not static. So
yeah, and you got to find the balance.
Right.
You got to find sustainable
right.
development is about development. It's about economic development, but it's doing so in ways that consider other aspects of the world and society and finds the right balance.
And, you know, I see that you're part of a much, you know, you've gotten numerous awards. I mean, I'm not even sure where to go with all this because I have just such a great outline. Let's stick with Office Depot and then talk about the bigger piece of it that you're working with, you know, many large organizations, because what I'd like to ultimately get to is a little bit of a conversation about fair trade. So how has the efforts of Office Depot to move, you know, in some areas light green, in some areas media, in some areas medium, in some areas dark. What have been some of the rewards for Office Depot and the international recognition?
Well, the main one I'd say is when Newsweek magazine started their assessments of America's green leaders.
Right.
Their process was very rigorous. So what they do is they look at publicly available information about environmental performance of different companies. How have you actually done in terms of waste reduction, carbon reduction, packaging efforts, water, etc. So really metrics oriented first. Then they looked at opinions. So that they have Newsweek reached out to a large number of leading sustainability thinkers and asked for their opinion on different companies. And then there was also an evaluation of policies. And we were lucky enough in Newsweek's first rankings in 2010 to be recognized as number one greenest large retailer and number 18 greenest company in the Fortune in the 500 largest companies in America, and then we got up in terms of the latest 2012 was we got number 8 greenest large company and number 1 greenest large retailer in the world. So I'd say that's the main one. We've also got lots of awards in Europe for our leadership in the office supply sector. But the Newsweek one, I think, is the one we're most proud of.
I mean, it's really big. And I have to ask you this. I just have to ask you this. When you heard about that award, were you thinking about the days when you had the meetings and nobody came? What if I had a meeting and nobody came? Were you thinking, I'm glad I stayed with it because now we're getting international recognition?
Yeah.
Was there a moment?
Well, I think I really learned that perseverance pays, and the more you learn about success and how people make progress, it's the ones that stick with it through hard times, and the ones who bounce back from pain and suffering are the ones that I think break through. And
tenacity and perseverance.
That's part of sustainability, I suppose, isn't it? Keep going.
Yes, and believe me, I'm a walking placard, billboard for that, because Mrs. Green's World, I'm still not yet recognized as the Oprah of Green, but trust me, someday there'll be people filling that TED Talk saying she did it, because she keeps showing up and I keep dialing the number to get you on the phone.
Right.
When you talk about tell me about the value you place and the possible impact of going from, your sphere of influence, which is large because it is Office Depot and now Office Max, I mean, magnificently large, to being a part of a Sustainable Purchasing Leadership Council. Do those things, sometimes they're great, sometimes they're a networking opportunity. Are they impacting policy in a bigger, more strategic and organic way? Do they help collectively have more power and move the needle forward?
Yeah, well, let me explain how Sustainable Purchasing Leadership Council came about first, and then we'll talk about the potential impact. So back in 2008, EPA and ANSI, which is the American National Standards Institute, and a set of eco-labels such as Eco-Logo and Green Seal,
right,
and the people around Energy Star, all started getting together and saying, look, there's no standardization of eco-labels, and there's no consistency, and for the average consumer, they're confused about which eco-labels are valid and which ones are not. And so there's a group that founded, triggered by EPA and ANSI, called the Green Products Roundtable. It was convened by an organization called Keystone, who facilitates dialogue on major national policy matters.
Okay.
And Green Product Roundtable started gathering, I think there's about 35 people from different spheres of influence. So NASPO was involved. NASPO is the National Association of State Purchasing Officials. A number of federal agencies were involved. Cities were involved. NGOs such as World Wildlife Fund and Rainforest Alliance were involved, and a series of corporations. We started wrestling with the problem of how to resolve the lack of clarity about eco-labels, and that pivoted to Well, what's the definition of green product? Because that's unclear as well. And then we started realizing that it's not just green product, but it's how to do the act of green purchasing, especially focused on the large business-to-business buyer, because it might not be choosing a greener thing in that product
right.
category. It might be choosing something different.
Right.
It might be not buying. It might be innovating beyond. And I'm sort of really taking this problem that was initially framed very narrowly, what is a good eco label, into where it went, which is what is green purchasing, to how to do it, and then recognizing that sustainability is wider than green. And so we ended up creating a formal entity called the Sustainable Purchasing Leadership Council that now includes 130-plus organizations, very, very large. The largest buyer in the world is part of this organization, GSA, the General Services Administration
right.
of the federal government.
Right.
Many states. They're all wrestling with the problem of we want to do sustainable purchasing as institutions, but we don't necessarily know how. And we don't necessarily know what comes first, what comes second, how to distinguish between different product categories. And ultimately, we all want to try and make a positive impact on the world through our purchasing. And this entity, Sustainable Purchasing Leadership Council, is trying to do that, trying to find how to do this act of sustainable purchasing or process sustainable purchasing well. The reason I think it's very exciting and powerful is if you look this is an imperfect analogy, but it's a good one. It's a reasonable one. The U.S. Green Building Council started in 1994. When they started, there was no definition of green building.
Totally right.
Right?
Yes.
You could, if you put a few recycling bins in your workplace, you could say, well, we're a green building, we recycle. Then if you put a few energy-efficient lights, you could say, we put energy-efficient lights and we're a green building. Well, what USGBC did is crafted a methodology, a rating system, training programs, an expo around green building, and now LEED we are already new construction. LEED is almost, or green building, it's almost 50% of new construction in America. That's
huge, and
phenomenal.
It's a perfect example of what can happen. And it's only what? Well, it's 20 years, but it's still, that's a lot to move forward in a really relatively short amount of time.
Yeah, and so what people don't realize is USGBC represents about 8% of GDP. It's a significant industry, very significant. But what about the rest of the economy? What about the 92% of the economy
right.
that isn't necessarily affected by green building? Or if it is, indirectly. So what SPLC, and readers, your listeners can go to sustainablepurchasing.org and learn about SPLC, is hoping to solve for the wider notion of sustainable purchasing what USGBC originally did for green building, but the scope is much broader. It's economic, social, and environmental. It's about the act of purchasing everything, focused on institutional buyers. But that's why we think there's great hope. And Office Depot is a key enabler through our funding and our very deep involvement over the years, and we just stuck with it. When other people said this problem or this beast is too it's too much of a beast to handle, we stuck with it. We said we want to help create this entity. We believe in it because we think the act of buying is tremendously powerful in changing our path as economies, as our impact on the planet, our impact on people. The act of buying is so powerful that we want to solve for how to do it better.
And from where I sit, Yama, is the power, the ultimate power, the true power for changing all this is with the people and their purchasing. I mean, we've got the power. That's what I say to people. Nobody's forcing our hands to buy anything ever in any store in which we enter. How do you feel the consumer is rising to this challenge? Do the, not the B2B customers that you have, but the people that walk in the store, the small businesses that order from you, which is, you know, B2B, but not on the, you know, the grand scale, how are they doing? Does it matter more what you're doing and what you're saying about labeling green products? Are they looking for it? I know that's a long question, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
Where's the consumer?
So there's, you mentioned the notion of shades of green in one of your earlier questions, and I think we still have a relatively small niche of people, maybe 20% of the consumer base, that's actively buying in line with wider purpose, you know, people and planet considerations.
Right.
Then we have this, and I think the millennials are in this next group where they're open to wider considerations like fair trade or the fact that this item came from a woman-owned business or minority business or that has certain environmental attributes, but they're maybe another 20-30% of the population. I think we've still got 50% of the population that's really not necessarily engaged in these topics and really buying primarily for immediate cost savings or, you know, design or,
right,
or whatever. I mean, classic traditional reasons.
Right. Purchasing decisions.
Partly it's driven by the fact that the retailer community has not done a good enough job at you know, making the case for environmentally preferable products. And I'll give you one example. Many people still believe all environmentally preferable products are more expensive. It's simply not true.
Not true. Right? Great to bring that up.
You know, certain product categories where greener equals more expensive, but other product categories where greener is in it less expensive right away, and many others where greener is, it requires a little bit of investment but results in very substantial economic gains in time. And so we have to do a better job as a marketing community to better sell that. But I'd also say there is a big what we call a say-do gap in terms of the consumer's interest in green. And what I mean by that is, in countless green marketing surveys, there is a clear indication by the consumer marketplace that they are very interested in buying greener products, very interested in paying more for greener products where greener products are more expensive, but the action to follow that promise is much more limited in terms of the data.
I love that you made that point. It's kind of like when I go to a sustainability conference and they give all the speakers plastic water bottles. It's like, come on, folks. This is part of the integrated message of sustainability, and plastic water bottles are a piece of that. It's the branding and the message. So at least give out a reusable bottle. It's an integrated approach that I so thoroughly embrace. So
yeah, let me layer an economic message there. Those water bottles cost about 2,000% more than tap water that could be filtered.
Yes, there you go. And they could have water stations. I mean, it's ridiculous. I do consulting with some companies, and the first thing I do is ask for their, you know, what each dealership is using for how much their budget is on reusable bottles, on plastic bottles. Yeah. And then we've replaced some of them and lowered that budget item alone by 50 to 55%. So that's the economic sense you're talking about. Okay, we don't have a lot of time left, so I want to know what's next for you. When's your first book coming out? Because you've quoted a lot of good books. I see that you have a page where there's, I found it somewhere in my myriad of research page I visited, but when are we going to hear about your story in a book? You got to write one.
Well, that's really nice of you to say. I've actually got a chapter written of one, but it's a matter of finding time, isn't it? I mean, you get that.
Yes.
It's a matter of making time.
It is
a matter of making time and just doing it. So I've got a few books sort of brewing in my head. One that's got a chapter written, but when I'll actually do it is depends on a few factors. Probably more than anything, my
You're having a life. You're having a life.
Just do it.
And I promise you, when you do it, we'll have you back on the show so you can talk about your book. And my book, I'm not forward promoting it yet, but my book is supposed to come out in December. And it's taken me 3 years. I mean, Mrs. Green is very busy, too. So I know what you mean. I had to take a couple of weeks off, and then it still didn't get done. But that's great. One more thing. A call to action for everybody that's listening. One call to action.
Ooh, I wasn't expecting this. But let me suggest that you accept, if you're really interested in the environment and you really want people to act in ways that are in line with what you want to advocate.
Right.
Remember that they're not there yet. They're not there.
Great message.
And the way you get people is by trying to understand where they are.
Meet people where they are. What a great message.
And then move them gently.
Gentle
nudges and the right arguments.
Okay,
we're not gonna persuade with aggressive arguments.
Love ending on that note. Okay. Yamez, thank you so much. Yamez Siddiqui, keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Gina. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.